Welcome to this short recording, where you're going to hear some of the podcast material from CCHB's new educational course on volunteering confidently, compassionately, and effectively alongside people experiencing homelessness. First of all, let's listen to some of the material from our first podcast with John Canessa, a vicar who's been working alongside homeless people for 2 decades.
Whether you're walking past somebody in the street or whether you're volunteering and you're in a context where you're turning up to a venue to volunteer, where that's what's happening, that's the provision that's been provided by CCHP. Actually just saying, look, how are you doing? How's your day gone? What have you been up to this week? And just connecting with the person. Sometimes if you're on a street and a person's asking for money and there's a very direct ask, there's still a way of saying, I'm really sorry, I don't have any money. But I'm just wondering how you are. I don't think that's about necessarily being a particular personality type or being an extrovert. I think there's just something about saying, I'm choosing to just see you and to not give you some money, but I'm going to give you my attention. So I know there's another clip.
Is this Brooke?
Which is Brooke, and Brooke talks very clearly about the importance of doing precisely that.
Exactly. I wonder if it's helpful then to listen to Brooke now.
Do you think that a lot of people who want to help understand that it's about just speaking to someone who's homeless is the first step?
I don't think people do understand that. They just like to throw money at people to think that that's okay, but actually it's just sitting down talking to them that is more valuable.
Sitting down talking to someone is much more valuable than giving them money?
It is, yes.
Yeah. And that's your experience?
That is my experience.
Do you think that's true for other people who you met in hostels and when you were homeless?
I think so, yeah.
What is it you get out of it when someone just sits down and talks to you?
Just the feeling of belonging. Because there's so many people that walk past that just stick your nose up and just feel like that. As they have that this image of this typical homeless person. But that's not the case most of the time.
Yeah, so Brooke there says it's a feeling of belonging and for which I'm also thinking there's something just about connecting as people there in that moment where there isn't a power imbalance because you know where there is when you've introduced money, you're just there giving. There's a mutuality, a reciprocity, if I could say the word, where actually it's you're just both connecting and giving each other time in each other's presence. So it is just as simple as just being with somebody and listening, rather than I need to do something that makes me feel better or I need to do something that will fix a problem that I have made an assumption about.
Secondly, let's take a listen to some of the material we recorded in our podcast with Natalie Andrews, who is a local vicar in the Ely area and an expert on deep, active listening.
I find that very interesting as well. And I suppose when you bring up emotion there, Natalie, and the emotions behind someone, what someone's saying, it reminds me of a conversation I had with Tracy, who talked about the chance to express yourself in the importance of listening. And what I heard from that was that it's about something going on beneath the words and maybe it links to the emotions you're talking about. So I wonder if it might be helpful now to listen to what Tracy had to say in her profound comments during our conversation.
Can I ask about how people help? What do you think the best way for people who want to help, people who are experiencing homelessness, is to help? What can people do for the best if people say, I want to help? What can they do?
Listening, actually hearing, and I don't mean just listen, I mean actually hear what someone's saying and not saying sometimes. Quite often when somebody's in a lot of pain, what's in front of you is not actually what you're hearing. There's a lot, you can hear a lot deeper. Giving somebody a chance to express how they feel, what their experience is, what it means to them.
Yeah, that is very powerful, isn't it? And I think, as well as listening to the things that aren't said, I think that can tie in then as well with body language. So we've mentioned the emotions, listening to the emotions, reflecting back their story, reflecting back the emotions, but also maybe saying, I noticed when you said that, you put your hand on your tummy, or I noticed when you did that, that you took a big sigh. And just picking up on what they're doing with their body language, they say, yeah, actually, because I feel it here in my tummy, in my stomach, or in my heart. And so again, those emotions, because we're made, I think at the beginning we said, you know, this is about listening to the whole person. We're made body, mind and spirit. And again, this deeper listening is about listening to the whole of the person. So I really believe that our emotions and our physicality are all very, very connected. So when we are talking, we might experience pain in our body, or that's expressed, you know, we might be talking with a very clenched jaw. So you begin to be a really, I guess, a good detective, really, because you're able to listen at that deeper level as well with what's going on in the whole of the person.
Now let's take a listen to some of our recording with Oliver Sampson, who is a senior drug and alcohol worker in the Oxfordshire area and has been working alongside homeless people suffering with addiction for several decades.
When you're afraid, relapse happens, because addiction takes away the fear. Addiction takes away that fear of, I'm not right, I don't feel right, I don't feel whole. But when I take this substance, I feel whole. So I'm going to take that substance. And you can tell that I spoke with people who inject drugs regularly. It's my job. and we always do the basic harm minimization drug, where we give them needle exchange, we do all that stuff. And you can tell, I would say any problematic class A drug user in the UK today will know what they're doing is not healthy. It's a bit like everybody knows smoking's not healthy. I don't think there's many adults in the UK would think smoking's healthy. It's not eradicated, though. And it's because it gives them something that they're not getting somewhere else.
This idea of there being something underneath an addiction, it was something that Kevin spoke about when I spoke to him. So I wonder if it would be helpful to bring in his voice now to reflect on.
Do you think a lot of people who you've come to know in the homeless community have experienced some really bad trauma?
Yes. You know, I see that there's two drugs on the street. One is heroin, one is crack cocaine. You know, there's, you know, people saying things about drugs or whatever, but I see that there are a lot of homeless people. It's like they self-medicate, because they don't want to live. There's part of them that don't want to, they don't want to end their life, you know, because they had something, you know, that sometimes, and also I've seen a lot of what I call Peter Pan syndrome, where they've had this traumatic experience, but then their brain has now stayed in that young state, but their body's getting older. But they're still, because they don't know how to sort out what happened, it's stunted their growth in their mind, but their body still carries on, you know. And I see heroin, you know, is an opiate. An opiate's basically a painkiller. That's all it is. It's just a painkiller. So, you know, a very strong painkiller. They use it in hospitals, you know what I mean? So, you know, to sedate you, you know, with, you know, extreme amounts of pain. So if we look at the symbolism to do with that, it's basically these people are going through an immense amount of pain and they're just trying to to kill that pain. That's all they're trying to do. You know what I mean? They're trying to hide from something that they don't probably know how to deal with.
Through drugs?
Yeah, just through drugs. I don't think anybody just goes to drugs because it's the greatest thing. You know, maybe you get recreational, but the people that harden people out on the street, I don't think they go into that.
So you'd say that addiction is about healing deeper pain?
The deeper pain, yeah. You know, you get addicted to basically trying to heal that pain. That's what happens. That's what the addiction is. It's not really the drug. The drug's just a stimulant. That's all it is.
So a number of things,
yes,
that Kevin said there, which echo some of the things you've already been saying. Is there anything particularly you'd like to pick up on what we've just heard?
A lot of people we meet have trauma. And it's an unmet trauma need that they haven't really addressed in their life. And that trauma is different for every individual, because some people have severe trauma, whether it's childhood abuse or neglect. Some people have trauma where they witness domestic abuse within their family setting. Some people, there's all different levels of trauma. And he's right in what he says. The sad thing about heroin is, as a drug, it works. It does what it's a Ron Seal drug. It does what it says on the tin. And he's right in what he says as well, Kevin. If I break my leg today and go to the JR, they're going to give me a huge shot of diamorphine, which is really clean, pure heroin. You know, and I won't feel any pain. The difficulty is that's a localized pain, and that will go to my pain in my leg, and then once it's gone, it's gone. The pain that most people with trauma are trying to deal with heroin is not identifiable in a body part. I'll use the term, it's a spiritual pain. It's an emotional, spiritual pain that floats around.
Next, let's listen to part of our conversation with John Kurt, who's the chief exec of Hope Into Action, a national Christian charity looking to house and empower people experiencing homelessness.
And I think a lot of the learning that's been learned in, as I say, the majority world about development is very similar here. How do we develop people? Because one of the things is that people do hit crisis points, but a lot of the problems we're talking about are chronic problems. And you need a response that is not just permanently a crisis response. And that's the good thing about, say, a cooking course or a friendship or giving someone a role and building them up slowly, rather than just keeping them in a place of being a passive recipient.
I wonder if at that stage it might be helpful to listen to what Jay had to say. So Jay's someone I know who experienced homelessness a few years ago and now is rooted in the church community and absolutely loves the sense of responsibility that he's got serving in that church community.
It's not just the case that you come to church three times a week, which really helps, but you also, you're very active in church, aren't you? Yeah. You move the chairs and you help set up. Thank you. It really helps us. It really helps us at church. Yeah, all your help. You love. How does that feel to do that?
Now everybody tells me where the tables, how I want it. Judith tells me she wants the extra table or one or two. I put it out. Now I go space to put it, because when I set it up, I said, all right, we need more space on that side, more space on that. So I move it closer.
So you're given some responsibility. Yeah. You're given a task and a job.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel that you have that job and you're given that responsibility?
Oh, well, I'm very happy because I got something to do regular. When I come Tuesday, I do chairs and table, tea and coffees. On Thursday, I set up for the food bank. On a Sunday, I come, I do the same thing, tea and coffee, set up biscuits, cakes, whatever. But after church finishes, they can have tea and coffee, biscuits. And I love it.
And Jay's someone who remains quite vulnerably housed and has mental health difficulties, and indeed sometimes uses the food bank. But he's giving back, and he doesn't talk about this as something I'm just taking from church. He feels part of the church.
Absolutely. I was so struck by that it's the responsibility he loves. I love it, he says. And I think just as we feel good about being connected and helping others, so does everyone. And that's what he's doing. And you know, for me, it connects. Jesus says you find your life when you give it away. And that's what he's finding, life in giving himself to others.
Finally, let's listen to part of our conversation with Johnny Torrance, who is a theologian working at the University of Oxford.
But actually, so often, the most meaningful encounters I've heard from people in the homeless community, and I myself as being part of them have experienced, have been around food and drink, because they in some way are trying to hold that tension of relation and material need.
It's almost like Jesus knew what he was doing when he said we'll have a communion as the central thing that we do as a church, right? And, you know, they didn't have tea in the first century, so maybe it would be different if they had. But, yeah, like, again, think about what, like, matters to you. Think about how you want to be treated. Like, you have a very different experience with people. If you go in, like, if you have a meeting with someone and they offer you tea, it's actually a very different experience of the meeting. And I think about this teaching students, and you have a very different encounter if you share food together and if you share drink together. And I kind of was joking saying Jesus knew what he was doing with communion. It's also not a joke. There is a reason the central, the only like concrete church thing we have to do, the only real concrete church things we get from the New Testament is baptism and communion. Both of those are things which are very, very embodied. One of them is washing and one of them is eating. And equally, those are incredibly profound spiritual realities that have been communicated in those quite simple activities, right? And yeah, I think those, they take seriously the fact that we are bodies and yet also souls.
I love those examples. I think they both encapsulate the holisticness that we're trying to get at here. You can hear the food and the spirituality, the washing and the spirituality. And you can also see that there's so much more as well that goes on. I just found that a really helpful way of thinking about it. Thank you. That was really helpful to hear that.
It's something as well that I think Karen talks about in one of her recordings, when she talks about what's so nice when you're sleeping on the streets. Remember her experience, she says, is just going into a church and having some warmth and having a cup of tea. Now, warmth and a cup of tea, again, really bodily things. You feel the warmth on your body. You can drink a cup of tea. It's not completely going only material, but it's in the space of the church. It's attending to material needs. And in that space, it's a space where which attends to a spiritual dimension as well.
When you're sleeping rough, what you really just love, what's really nice, is just to sit in a warm room with a cup of tea, mm. A nice warm cup of coffee. It's just such a lovely feeling. Just being compassionate, I think, is helpful. Even if you can't alleviate the problem of the homelessness, you can at least, like, treating someone like a human being and talking to them, I think, is really good.
There's just something about holding that all together in our practice. These places of welcome and food, these places of company, conversation, and cups of tea, they themselves seem to embody the way we want to hold these things together. I am really struck by that today. Really struck.